So you did, you said you had prior, you already had like kind of your scuba experience and whatnot, like your mm-hmm. classified certified training. Was that from when you went traveling the summer before?
Yeah. So 2017, I was traveling around Southeast Asia with a few friends. And then when we got to, we did the classic full moon party.
Exactly.
In Thailand. So when we got to the full moon party, all of us had different plans. So we moved around, and good friend Matt Bugner and I, friend from Queens, he and I came to Koh Tao, which is the island neighboring Koh Phangan where they have the full moon party. He and I came to Koh Tao because we both decided, hey, let's get our scuba diving license. It'd be really, really cool. And yeah, I had no idea what I was in for after that. So Matt and I did our open water, which is the first certification, certifies you to 18 meters. And we said, oh, we got to stay and do our advanced. So let's get certified to 30 meters. Cool. Did that. Then Matt wanted to, Matt had a whole plan to go to Bali and to go to southern part of Thailand after that. And I had kind of not really stopped moving for about a month at that point. And I decided, hey, you know what? I want to be a bit slower here. I've still got a lot of time left. I wasn't too worried about, I wasn't worried with money at that point either. And I was only a month in. I said, I just want to slow this down a little bit. I'm going to stay here for a little bit longer and then I'll figure out my next move. So figured out that I would go to, Sri Lanka and meet up with a friend. And actually ended up not doing it. And staying and doing what's called the Dive Master Training Program, or DMT, your Dive Master Trainee. Dive Master is the entry level pro certification among scuba diving professionals. It means you can guide certified divers, and it seemed like a really, really interesting thing to do. It seemed like something completely different than anything I'd ever done before. I also should note that I found scuba diving very difficult and challenging at first, which was part of the allure to me. So I actually decided to stay in Koh Tao for 2 months instead of continuing traveling. I just got to scuba dive every day for, and learn, I mean, you learn how to scuba dive, well, every day for 2 months. I left here with 87 dives or something like that. So making a lot of ground up quick, right?
So did you go there just because it was known for its diving, or why'd you pick that spot to go to in general?
So it was funny. I always had envisioned getting, I wanted to try diving. I didn't know anything about it really. I didn't know what it was about. I just knew it was being underwater and being with fish, and I'd seen videos that of all this equipment they're wearing, and I thought, oh, that's kind of weird. But you get to be underwater and you get to see nature in its natural, in the most natural state you could possibly see it in, right? That was the big thing for me. But it's crazy how little I knew about scuba diving when I just kind of went in and signed up. So Koh Tao has always been the cheapest place in Southeast Asia to get your diving license. I didn't know that until actually along the way when I was in Vietnam, I had a couple of people recommend it. And so I said, oh, well, I was planning to do this in Bali. Why don't I do this in Koh Tao instead? It's right on the way. And yeah, turned out to be a pretty good idea, right?
Obviously it worked out. So what was the translation or the transition like in Thailand for sure? Like you said, you went there. And what was, do you kind of figured out about the economics around diving in that area? And why did you want to stay in that area once you kind of got your license and you figured out that was, well, obviously you wanted to go back there.
It's funny how much I thought I learned in the first 2 months I spent here in 2017. And then you come back and you actually, working as an instructor versus a dive master, for example, very, very different. You see very different things. Just because you're trained in different ways and you're trained to look at things in a different way. The transition was interesting. Do you want to talk about living situation? Do you want to talk about mental situation? What are you looking at?
let's go living, because I think that'll lead into kind of the mental side. Because I know when I first travel, you kind of take everything in. You're like, where the hell am I? And then it kind of it doesn't kick in till maybe like a week's in or even months in where you really are.
So the first time I got here, that you have to go through these funny little trials and tribulations of living in a country like Thailand and living on an island like Koh Tao. So there's certain things and certain things we're used to as Western people that are just not a thing over here. Like, for example, I thought that I needed to have a place to rent booked out months in advance. And then someone said to me, oh, just, no, here, I'll give you the person to go out to. Just talk to this person and they'll show you a bunch of apartments and you can move in tomorrow. And sure enough,
you're in.
I found that I've had hilarious landlords over the years too. I found Nono the slumlord first. That was my my first landlord. I called him, his name was Nono, but I just like to call him Nono the slumlord because he was really, really I remember going up to his place saying, yeah, I'm looking for a place, and him just going, here, get on my bike with me. And he's just dragging me up, like, I'm riding on the back of this guy's little motorcycle up the street. Boy. He's going to show me this house. You've never met him before. He goes, you move in tomorrow. And then he would always be outside kind of doing whatever outside the building. And he was really, really nice. Wanted to hang out with me some nights. And so, yeah, I just called him Nono the slumlord. That was, so but it,
did he
it
live
was,
with
it's
you?
It's crazy how easy it was. No. He
like,
didn't
was
live.
It one it was big a, it building a, or how, what's the setup there? Like, were you, did you,
it
were
was,
you like,
it was,
you kind of see it like House Hunters International or what?
There's either apartments or there's bungalows. Like, I live in a bungalow now, which is just like a kind of flat, as you would call it, if you're from the UK. And it's just a one floor apartment on that is not attached to any other apartments. Yep. And then there's buildings that have several apartments in them as well. So that first one was a building that had several apartments in it. I lived in the top floor and it was really hot because there was no air conditioning. I had one fan and it is blisteringly hot here in the summer.
Deadly. Not like you have any water around to jump in or anything to cool you down.
Oh yeah, no, no water anywhere. I don't know what you're talking about.
So how do you get there? I'm just honestly, disclaimer, I'm just looking at Google pictures of, what is it, Koh Tao? Is that how you pronounce it?
Koh Tao.
Yeah. So Koh
means
how do you get
island.
There? Okay.
So Koh means island, Tao means turtle. Turtle Island.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
Yeah, it's great, right? But also there is the monks on the island are Taoist as well. So I don't know if that has anything to do with the name, but I've been told that it's Turtle Island, Koh Tao.
Okay.
What was the question again? Sorry.
How do you get there? Because where do you fly into? How do you get to the island?
Yep.
You just hopping on a boat with your suitcase or what's the scoop?
So it's not as bad as you think. Thailand, the big thing in this is we'll talk about if you want to talk about the economics of the dive market and just tourism in Koh Tao or tourism in Thailand as a whole. You'll notice that traveling around a country like Thailand, which has had tourism for 30 plus years now and has been a really popular tourist destination for a while, that they have. They have decent transportation systems. It's not like what we'd expect in a country like Canada, but it's you never have trouble taking out money anywhere. You never have trouble getting somewhere the day of if you need to. And it's into Koh Samui, which is one of the neighboring islands. It's the bigger island, more of like the couples resort type island. Yeah. Or you take you have the lovely pleasure of taking the bus and boat from Bangkok to Koh Tao. So it's about an 8-hour bus and a 2-hour boat.
Oh, deadly. Oh,
Jesus.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, you get used to it. The boat's not bad at all. The boat's air conditioned, goes fast. For what it is, they have a really good transportation system to get to
If you
place.
Google the place though, and you see what it looks like, I'd be on a probably on a bus for 15 hours if I could get there, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So how is, I mean, not to kind of go on a negative path, but how has it been like with COVID there? And I'm sure you have some touch of what it's been like back home with your family. Yeah. So how is it different there in comparison to it is here?
Yeah. So here it started a little bit later. It started to come through around the more so towards the end of March, where you guys kind of got it in the middle. I think everything started to lock down back home in the middle of March. We were about a week later than you guys where things started to close. So I believe it was around the 26th of March, dive shops closed, restaurants had closed, bars and the pub crawl, they have a big pub crawl here that they do for tourists. It's really, really fun. That was closed immediately as well. That was closed. The bars and that were closed a little bit before even. And Thailand kind of takes it 1 month at a time. They designated all of the leaders of each province to have authority over what they do. So there's kind of different protocols in each place. And where we have so many Westerners and expats here, and a big community of Burmese workers as well. So it's been really nice to watch the island come together and support each other no matter what scale. In terms of the COVID impacts though, we've had to wear masks in public whenever we're outside of our houses since the beginning. Okay. That's been one thing that's been there the whole time. April is also the busiest tourist month here of the season because it's the biggest holiday of the year. It's called Songkran. It's if you ever look up some videos of Songkran in Thailand, it's the videos of people like outside in the streets shooting each other with water guns for a whole day, and they're hugely intoxicated, obviously, when they do it. So obviously they wanted to stop any partying or any bit of that. So they banned alcohol sales for about a month as well. Wow. They put a curfew at 10 p.m. So we had to be home at 10 p.m. And you couldn't be around. You couldn't be anywhere between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. for about a month. It wasn't that bad though. I mean, in terms of the actual lockdown measures here, there's still lots of nature to explore on the island. So as long as you're in small groups, hiking was still really accessible. Swimming. We would go down to the beach and work out, running on the beach as well. Anything to keep active. I mean, I feel like I'm not alone, and especially people here, but also back home, when you say that the quarantine's been a good wake-up call for a lot of people to get in shape.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, because you realize how fat you'll get really fast if you just sit around and you don't actually walk around all day, right? If you don't have to leave your house.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like physically, how much more I'm eating when I'm home, and just not going to the gym as well on the head and the barrel. It's just it hasn't been good news in that regards.
Yeah, no, I know. It's easy to lose control. Really, really easy.
How's the food like out there? You find you're eating a lot different. God.
We could spend the rest of the video this podcast talking about food. The food in Thailand is absolutely amazing. Yeah. I love Thai cuisine. It's my favorite cuisine in the world, I would say, definitely, because of the amount of exposure I've had to it. The only food that I've had from other places, the only other country that would probably rival for me is Indian food. I love Indian food.
Are you into spices? Yeah. Is that why?
So I'm getting there. I'm not really, I can't handle the really, really the Thai spicy. Like if you go to a restaurant, you say, they'll say, do you want it spicy? Do you want it mild? Or do you want it Thai spicy? Thai spicy is exceptionally hot.
Yeah. Drain in the head in water.
Yeah. One of my best friends here, his name's Sam. He is the most insane person I've ever seen when it comes to his tolerance for spice. I don't get it. It is ridiculous how hot the food he orders here is and how much he loves it. And how little reaction you get from him when he's eating food that would have me like crying, sitting there. It's insane. But yeah, they've got They've got so much different food in the north and the south too. The different types of curries, the different ways they do meat and pork and chicken. And just the way that they mix spices and everything's really, I mean, everything is very, very fresh. There's not a ton of fat and cholesterol or anything really, really bad in their food. They have a really, really good diet. They eat a lot of spice too. And the spice helps a lot with the sinuses and that for diving, which is really good for people. So, and spice helps for immune systems as well. So, it's a bit of a spicier diet. It's definitely different, definitely more flavorful than what I have at home now.
You think you'll struggle when you get back then?
No, I mean, I've spent enough time at home now though that I have my routines of foods that I eat back there and dishes that I cook. And I cook a lot at home versus here where I don't cook a lot at all. But yeah, I don't think it'll be that bad, but yes, will I miss the plethora of Thai food options that we have here? Absolutely.
So can you go and just grab is the meals cheap? Like, could you just go out and grab a quick meal that it's almost not worth cooking?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
I had pad Thai for dinner last night and it was $3.
Oh, wow. Jesus. Can't beat that.
Yeah. No, you can't beat that. It's pretty good. And it's a pad Thai that fills, like, I couldn't finish all of it because they give you such a massive portion. And it's one of the best pad Thais on the island. See, that's the best part about being here for a while is you learn the good spots for food. And they're all, I mean, the good spots are usually really cheap too.
That's awesome. Do you find you get too adventurous? I know you put in some of these notes that you have a few crazy food poisoning stories that you got into.
Oh, so I've never actually got food poisoning in Thailand though.
Oh, okay.
That was the funny bit. I have a couple of food poisoning stories. For a little while, I thought I was good for food poisoning once a year. Like, I just, between the age of the years 2016 to 2018, I was just kind of like, wow, it seems like I'm just going to get this once a year. and then 2018 came around, didn't get food poisoning. And then last year, sure enough, came right back. Got it. I've got food poisoning twice in Indonesia. So definitely different food there.
It's too bad. Is it just like you're just trying too many things or you're just like places don't get the green pass?
It's just been fluke accidents for me, honestly. And you didn't even really notice it at the time. I was eating fish for dinner and the next and at 5 a.m. I woke up and felt really, really bad. And the other one, I was actually traveling with my stepmother last year, in Komodo in Indonesia. Because that's a lot more of a rustic place, the food there is a bit dodgier. And we were doing well with the food, and we'd been to this same place for dinner 2 nights in a row. The third night, though, I got hit really hard and had to cancel the two days of diving after that, actually. So that was, yeah.
Food that was the worst part for you, probably.
Oh, yeah. It's not the fact that I had to cancel 2 days of diving. It's what they saw the first morning I missed when on the dive that I was supposed to be on. So, yeah. Well, we'll forget about it. It's okay.
I'm sure you've had enough crazy experiences for all of us to go around, though, which I kind of want to get into for sure.
Cool.
Let's talk about – so we talked about your landlord earlier, kind of – I forget his name. Nono? Was that
No. Yeah, yeah. So first landlord was No. Then I had Juan, and then
that was Juan. Was Juan 350 pounds? I see that. I see.
Juan was 300. Juan was about 350 pounds. So when I came here for 2 weeks in 2018, I was staying at a little hostel, in my own room that my friends had set up for me. And so I didn't even know where I was staying until I got here. And they just dropped me off there. And so I ended up staying at this place, and Juan was the landlord. And I didn't meet her until like 2 days in. I was like, wait, so who runs this place? And they're like, oh, Juan runs. She's not around right now. And then you come back and there's this big bed one day, and she sits in the big bed, and you come up and you go, oh my God, this woman's about 350 pounds. And she is the nicest, sweetest woman in the entire world. And she loves to party too. It's hilarious. The amount of times you would see her out at one of the bars during the 2 weeks I was here there. Cause I mean, I came to see some friends. I was only on a 2 week holiday. So, I was just here to have a bit of fun that year. And must have saw her like 4 or 5 times out drinking maybe, and with her friends, just having the time of their lives. But it was just hilarious. It's just, you can't write these things about the types of landlords you have.
Yeah, you gotta write a book one day. I know you write the articles.
Just about random things, yeah. Working towards it, hopefully.
Oh, really? Is that a goal?
Yeah, I mean, long term goal. Hopefully, we'll see. I've always loved writing, and it's always been a really important way of expressing myself that I've taken to, and I love storytelling. I've always loved doing that through writing. And so I don't know what I would write about yet, but I'm using kind of the writing I'm doing now to kind of get to that point.
I'm sure you have more than enough inspiration to take from, though, from what we've heard already so far.
I'd read a 350-pound landlord book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the Sunflower Hotel?
Oh, the Sunflower Hotel. Yeah. This is, I wrote down so many of these at random just because I was thinking about the, I know you guys talk about your drinking stories and that on here. I don't have many of them from the past year or so because I honestly don't drink as much as I used to. I've really cut it out the past year or so being here. I know you guys like to talk about some of these stories. So I got a few from 2017 when I came through. The Sunflower Hotel is the cheapest place for booze I've ever seen in my life, I think. When you're in Hoi An in Vietnam, it was my favorite place I visited in Vietnam. Beautiful little beach town, French inspired and everything. There's like nice little canals that run through. Absolutely gorgeous area. Lots of tourists as well. One of the hostels that people stay in is called the Sunflower Hotel. We didn't stay in the Sunflower Hotel. People love to go to the Sunflower Hotel at 8 p.m. every night because from 8 to 10, they have all you can drink for 100,000 dong. Thomas, can you pull out your calculator and find out how many Canadian dollars 100,000 dong is?
Dong?
Dong, yeah. Vietnamese is, their money is called dong. D-O-N-G.
1,000?
So is 100,000.
Oh, wow.
100,000 dong to Canadian dong.
$580 Canadian dollars. For one dong.
All you
or
can
one,
drink, for, all you can drink for 2 hours. For 2 hours for $580.
Jeez, it's funny, the hostels, I don't know how they make any money because they don't charge anything for rent. They don't charge anything for booze, like, and they pay rent. So I'm not sure how they're still in business, but
I don't know how it works. I've never worked in that model of business or anything like that. I couldn't tell you, but they still exist. So they must be making some money, right?
Exactly. Another different thing that's different from here for sure, like the bars are different in regards to pricing. You said that it was a bit different flying on Chinese Airlines as well. How was that?
Oh, flying on Chinese Airlines is hilarious. I have a specific way of flying because I don't like flying long. I really can't sit still for long distances sometimes. I just have trouble with it. So when you hop on a 16-hour flight from Toronto to Shanghai, I usually like to take an edible with me, or take an edible in advance so that it hits me right when I got on the plane and I can sleep for like 10 hours. And it works beautifully every time.
Jack's paying attention now.
Yeah, man. That's a smart move. I'm going to write that one down.
So that's been my weapon of choice when it comes to flying for the past couple of years now. But flying on a Chinese airline when you're In that state, is really hilarious too, because I mean, you're the only white person on the airline. You're the only white person on the plane, like, hands down. It's in, and as soon as you walk on the plane, you realize that very fast when you go and sit down. And of course, in the state you're in, you're just kind of in a little bit of a people watching mode. So it's a really, really pleasant experience. It's really, really funny.
That's crazy. Is it like, is the actual flying experience different too? Because I've seen some pictures of some of these like Asian flights and they just look like next level. But I'm not sure if you were flying on those type of flights or if you're kind of the budget one line of chairs on each side flights.
Yeah, it's definitely your budget. They're definitely budget, but nothing crazy. I mean, I personally think most people take a bit too much precaution when it comes to flying. I don't think any of these the Chinese airlines. I've had so many pleasant, safe flights on Chinese airlines, and I still have people I know from back home saying like, I would never fly on a Chinese airline. Why don't you book an Air Canada or something like that? But to me, and if saving money is your goal too, there's not much of a difference. You get what you pay for.
So you did the flights, but you told me that you haven't been in a car for almost 3 months. Not many vehicles out there, just motorcycles or what?
Oh, that was more so the funny realizations you have when you're on your way back is, oh shit, I haven't been in a car for 3.5 months. Actually, I haven't been in a car for 5 months now.
Holy shit.
Jesus.
Yeah, so, because normally you go and renew your visa, but because of the lockdown, everybody is staying put. I haven't left the island since January 28th.
What's the main mode of transportation when you're on the island then? Like how could you walk? How big is the island? I guess is what I'm getting at.
It's about 2 kilometers across and 5 kilometers north-south.
So you're doing a lot of heel-toe express then?
A lot of heel-toe express. Not as much heel-toe express as you think. People ride mopeds everywhere here. Like little like automatic bikes, you know, little scooters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I have a scooter. Most people have scooters. That's kind of the way it goes. Some people have some serious bikes though too. There's you get your Yamaha or your Kawasaki's around here a few times that come in from Bangkok, and you can hear roaring from like
waking everyone up on the island.
You. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's hilarious.
So did you just like go to the store and spend like how many dongs did it cost for your motorbike?
Baht is Thai. It costs, yeah, it's cheap. You can either buy or you can rent. Depends what you want. I bought mine for 7,000 baht in April of last year.
Wow. And that's probably
7,000 baht. That's lasting. That's about $400.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Like if you think of a transit pass, right? Like I pay that.
Yeah.
Two months here.
Yeah, I mean, and like I had it's lasted. I'm obviously they have their share of little special tricks that each of them do, but because they're all used and old. But they get me from point A to point B, and I don't feel like it's gonna fall apart on the way there. So that's goal one.
That's a plus.
Do you have a friend named Neil?
Oh yeah, Neil. I wrote down. Yeah, yeah. So Neil getting hit. Neil Dudani. He was in my year in Queens Commerce. Okay. He, me, and one of our other friends, AJ, traveled. The three of us were our primary traveling group the first time I came out here. Neil, I must have wrote down that Neil, in our notes, that Neil got upended by a moped. And it was one of those things where you check to make sure if he's okay, and you're like, are you okay? And when you find out he's okay, you all burst out laughing. You know those?
Yeah, oh yeah. Where was it?
We had a few of those.
it was in Hanoi in Vietnam. The bikes there are crazy. It is insane how many bikes are in Hanoi and in Ho Chi Minh City, and Learning to navigate walking across traffic there is quite an experience. And we were just figuring this out on day one, and Neil was just behind us walking and somehow got clipped by one of the bikes and like upended and fell on the street. Walked across, gave the guy a really, really dirty look. And then once we figured out he was okay, everybody laughed really, really hard about it.
Another thing you wrote down here, which I just couldn't fathom, is you told me that you don't really wear shoes that much or at all anymore.
What's that been like? I love it. So I personally think that everybody should wear shoes less. I could get into a lot of my own personal opinions on this stuff, but I don't need to go too far into it. People here wear flip-flops or they don't wear shoes. I mean, a lot of the time you're barefoot because you're on the beach or you're on the boat or you're in different places. Also, in Thailand, it's custom that you take off your shoes before you go into anybody's house or any shop or anything like that, because they have their own kind of cultural thing with feet where they don't like somebody. You walking into a store with your flip-flops on is quite disrespectful to them, basically. But I don't wear shoes anymore. I don't know how to explain
anyone
it to
around
you,
me. If I did that, if I wore no shoes, people would not want to be around me. That's for sure.
Connect with the ground around you through not wearing shoes. I follow these guys on Instagram and Facebook called The Foot Collective. They're out of Ottawa. A couple of guys that started this movement that basically, their whole premise is that people need to wear shoes less and people need to spend more time barefoot because humans are just not as connected with their feet as they used to be, unfortunately. And so the way that they explain it is kind of like when you wear shoes that are kind of locking your foot in and not allowing your foot to move naturally, it's almost like wearing a blindfold on your foot. If you compare your foot to your eyes. So you always want to wear sunglasses on your eyes so that your eyes can act normally, but have a shade on them that allows them to act normally versus a shoe that has an insole and locks in your foot and scrunches your toes together. It's kind of like putting a blindfold on your foot. It's not allowing your foot to act normally with some sort of apparatus on it, right? So, sure. Going around barefoot, and I mean, I've noticed it through doing yoga, through running I run barefoot on the beach now. That's my the primary way I run. It's a good way to change up and to get more connected with different muscles in your body too. Like the first time you ever run barefoot, did you try it? Man, your feet are gonna kill tomorrow because you've never used your feet like that before. it's great exercise. It's a great way to just actually see some changes in your feet. Like my feet and my toes spread completely apart now, and they used to be locked together. Like I don't know if you guys ever stand up and you try and spread your toes out as far as they can. Like the Foot Collective guys, their whole bit is that your toes are supposed to spread like that. Our feet are naturally born to be open and spread out. The shoes we wear, as much as we love our big bulky shoes, big bulky shoes don't allow our feet to function normally.
Yeah, never thought about it like that.
Yeah, it's a crazy way to think of it.
I'm looking down at
mine. It's crazy how little your feet move.
Yeah, my toes do not move at all.
A bit more during quarantine because I'm not going out as much.
My favorite test with people is try and wiggle your pinky toe and none of your other toes.
Oh God,
that's not working for me.
That is not working.
But that's all it is. It's just building connections to your brain and your feet. And when you're using shoes, you build so few connections to your brain and your feet because you're not really connected to your feet. You're just connected to the shoe.
All right. I thought that was cool. I don't want any of the foot people to get too turned on, so we won't go into it too much. Speaking of turned on,
the foot fetish section of the podcast.
You do have a story that you wanted to mention about Toby. Do you know this story?
Oh, yes.
You want to talk about this? This is the one me and Jack were looking at.
I had to give you guys. Yeah, so I wanted to.
This one jumped first.
Especially after feet.
There was so the funny, like probably the funniest thing that we did in Southeast Asia the first time we were here, was this crazy experience on a boat that's called Castaways, and it's in Ha Long Bay in Vietnam, and it's just a booze fest for a good 3 days. And there was a guy who was it was spiking people's drinks with Viagra on that day. And oh my god, I didn't get spiked, but the amount of stories that people had, it's just like I just had to go sit in the water because I just couldn't deal with the thing.
Especially with really, a bathing really suit funny. On, like there's no comfort.
I know. Bathing suit. And I mean, so it's like there's 60 people. And half of them are male, the other half are female, and that's going on.
Oh, 15 man. Tents. Yeah, that's hilarious. That's not good. But
no. It was a funny story. And then the best part, where it came full circle was when I ran into the guy when he had passed through Koh Tao a couple of months later, and he did the exact same thing to me, and he got me. And I remember I said to him, "Oh, there's not gonna be a pill in this, is there?" And he goes, "Ah, I can't believe you remember that, man. That's hilarious." And I said, "Yeah, you know, don't do it." And 20 minutes later, pitched a tent of my own, went home.
Oh, that's deadly.
Waited for it to go down.
If I were to get spiked by something, I guess it would be Viagra. But
as things go, that is one of the better. I mean, probably one of the better things you can have a drink spiked with. I'm very fortunate that it was that and not something else.
Yeah, we definitely don't want anybody going around and drugging people. That's definitely not a good idea. But I guess Viagra isn't an extra bad drug. So I'm glad that one didn't end up too bad for you.
Exactly. Inconvenience. I want to get into diving because I know how passionate you are about it. And realistically, we're probably not going to get a guest on again who has more knowledge of it than you. But I want one more story about hiking Mount and Eddie the Eagle. Do you know that story? And you want to tell that one?
I love this. Of course, I know the story.
It is yours. So I figured you know it. I don't know why I asked, but.
Yeah. I was very fortunate enough to, when I was in Indonesia in 2017, they had the island right across from, so Indonesia, there's Bali, and then right in the north, there's a set of islands just outside called the Gili Islands. And they're part of Lombok, which is the neighboring island. Lombok has a big crater and mountain on it called Mount Rinjani. There was actually a really bad earthquake there in October of 2017. So I was actually there 2 months before the earthquake. You can't get all the way up to the crater rim anymore. So I was really, really fortunate enough to get up there into a place where they don't send people anymore because the crater has changed. And I don't know exactly what's happened with the trails, but they're just not, I mean, there's certain parts that you actually can't access them anymore because of this earthquake. So I was traveling alone at this point. I'd met up with a few people that I'd met in the Gili Islands. You basically book a full 3-day, 2-night hike out of the Gili Islands straight into Rinjani, and it is a hell of a hike. Before I say anything about the hike, though, when you get to personally witness the people that do that hike every day, they're some of the most insanely fit and capable humans I've ever met in my entire life. I should send you photos of the porters. So every trail has porters. It's kind of like similar to the Sherpas that you would have if you went up Mount Everest or something like that, something to compare it to. The porters carry everything except your personal goods. So I got my bag, but they've got everybody's food, the tents, things like that. So they carry these big wooden poles with two baskets on the end with about 40 pounds in each basket, and they destroy these trails barefoot or in, they destroy these very hard trails barefoot or in flip-flops, like a couple of times a week.
Jeez.
Wow. It's natural nuts workout. It's nuts to watch. Eddie the Eagle, though, was a name I chose for him because he was our tour guide for this. His name was Eddie. And Eddie has dwarfism. Eddie was up to my, like, below my chest, and you walk up to the greeting area, and this guy comes up and he starts like punching you in the stomach just as a joke, and he's like, "Hey, I'm Eddie. I'm gonna be your tour guide." And is this really happening right now? Eddie was the funniest tour guide I've ever had on any tour I've ever been on. And a sensational hiker too. One of the funniest people in the world, and just so much passion for what he did. So, appearances can always be deceiving. That was maybe the number one piece of advice I would give anybody that's coming to Southeast Asia to travel, is appearances will definitely be deceiving here. But just take everything and be open to it. And it turns out you meet some really interesting people. So Eddie was one of those people that we met throughout that. So yeah, he was hilarious, and
that's funny.
He showed us a really, really good time. And the fortunate bit was that the unfortunate bit is I don't know what Eddie's doing right now, because a lot of those hikes, a lot of the people that hike that place obviously aren't there anymore. And even leading up to it, the past 2 years, they haven't been able to go up all the way to the crater rim, so it hasn't been as busy. And a lot of the Sherpas, or sorry, a lot of the porters or guides on those trails have moved on to other jobs.
Yeah, it's kind of sad when you think about it that way, right?
It's tourism, though. Unfortunately, things turn over, right? People, what's the next shiny object that everybody's going to want, right?
Exactly.
Bali's a massive shiny object right now. You know,